Welcome to the Simple Money, Simple Life podcast. I am Matt Erickson, and I'm your host. This is a podcast where we explore how simplicity beats complexity, especially in money matters. We explore investing, personal finance, and how to live a simple and awesome life. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 60, titled A Deeper Dive. Today, we are going to tackle some more complex topics around investing and retirement. And for some of you, I think you'll really enjoy this. For others, your eyes and ears may gloss over, but I think they're important concepts to understand for any investor. So please bear with me and hang in there. This will help you to learn some concepts you've maybe never heard about and will come in handy one day possibly for you. So tonight, before recording this, Rachel, my wife, and I went out to a place called Big J's. And it's a really good burger and shake place. It happens to be the same place where Uncle Rico and Napoleon Dynamite filmed a scene where they're in a restaurant eating either tots or onion rings and talking about their business venture. So we were hanging out there tonight. It was really good, actually. So any of you local listeners, shout out for Big J's. It's a good place to go eat and enjoy the evening. So anyway, a deeper dive. We're going to talk first about the 72T rule. So possibly one you've never heard of before. So this has to do with IRAs, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about it, but it's a rule that basically allows you to take out money out of your IRA without being penalized. So the rule on IRAs and Roth IRAs is you can take out the contributions at any time, but to take out any of the growth before age 59 and a half, you're taxed at a 10%, or you're penalized 10%. And if it's from a traditional IRA, you will be taxed on it as well. So the 72T rule is for someone who might want to retire early and does not want to pay that 10% penalty. So there are rules around taking out a certain amount. You have to commit to a certain time frame of taking it out before 59 and a half, and you have to take out equal amounts. It's pretty complicated. And there are also some rules the IRS has around taking money out of your IRA for medical expenses and purchasing your first home. But the rule of 72 withdrawals should be considered, in my opinion, kind of as a last resort, excuse me, when all other options are exhausted. So it's not something I would recommend. If you're planning on doing early retirement, it's probably better to strategize ahead of time, open up a brokerage account, and take money from that instead of taking it from your IRAs, and let your IRAs and 401ks be money until at least 55, which I'll explain in a minute, and maybe 59 and a half. So next I'm going to explain the rule of 55, which has to do with your 401k plans or your 403bs. So employer-sponsored tax-deferred retirement plans like 401ks and 403bs have rules about when you can access your funds. In general terms, if you withdraw funds before age 59 and a half, you'll trigger an IRS tax penalty of 10%. Well, the good news is that there's a way to take your distributions a few years early without incurring this penalty. This is known as the rule of 55. So let's say you're contemplating early retirement. You're in a job that offers a 401k, and you need to know how the rule of 55 works, because you might get to 55, 56, 57 and decide you want to retire and leave your company. So under the terms of this rule, you can withdraw funds from your current job's 401k or 403b plan with no 10% penalty. Tax penalty if you leave that job in or after the year you turn 55. For qualified public safety workers, it can start as early as 50. So it doesn't matter whether you were laid off, fired, or just decided to quit. The distributions are not completely tax-free if it's a traditional 401k. Like all withdrawals from a traditional 401k or 403b, you do have to pay income tax. So only the 10% tax penalty is bypassed in this particular scenario that we're talking about. So you're in a job, you have a 401k, and you leave at age 53, this does not apply. However, if you leave after age 55, you can, with most plans, you can tap into that money without hitting that 10% penalty. Now, if you're considering this, you definitely want to talk to your employer, your HR department, or the fund company you're with to make sure your plan offers this. Most of them do. So it's a really nice hack for people who maybe want to retire and get out a few years early, assuming they have enough money. So the next one we're going to talk about is the backdoor Roth. So a backdoor Roth IRA is a way for people with high incomes to sidestep the Roth's income limits. So as you probably know, in order to contribute to a Roth IRA, you have to make under $208,000 if you're a married couple. And if you're single, I think it's in the 80 to 90 range. I can't remember the exact number. So basically, a backdoor Roth IRA boils down to kind of a loophole. And you put money into a traditional IRA, and you don't, this is for high income earners who make above that number that I said, you put it into a traditional IRA, you do not get the tax deduction, but then you're able to convert that traditional into a Roth IRA. So you would pay your taxes on that money, but the money would be in the Roth for the foreseeable future and be able to grow tax-free after that. So you kind of take a tax hit when you put it in, but then it can grow tax-free. It's a way for high income earners to be able to get Roth assets. So even though you didn't qualify to contribute to a Roth IRA because you made too much money, you get to go in the back door anyway, no matter what your income. This is for anybody. So the good news, because your money grows tax-free, and that's can be pretty sweet in retirement, it's a really nice way to have both traditional and Roth assets if you're a high income earner. So getting back to my numbers, I took some notes and I want to straighten out a little bit of misinformation I shared. So for 2021, the government allows only those people with modified adjusted gross incomes below $208,000 for married filing jointly. That's what I said, but it's $140,000 for singles, so higher than I said earlier on the show. So if your income is above the limit, a backdoor Roth might be a good solution for you. Now, there's talk about the government getting rid of these backdoor Roths. There's also one called a mega backdoor Roth IRA that has to do with people who can contribute more than the traditional amount to a 401k and then do the same technique. There's word that maybe next year they're going to do away with this loophole. So those who are interested in doing it might want to do it this year. Another one I want to talk about is called Roth conversions. So a Roth conversion is a transfer of retirement assets from a traditional IRA or a simple IRA or a Roth or a SEP IRA into a Roth IRA, which creates a taxable event. So a Roth IRA conversion can be advantageous for individuals with large traditional IRA accounts who expect their future tax bills to stay at the same level or grow at the time they plan to start withdrawing from the tax-advantaged accounts. So once you hit age 72, if you have a traditional 401k or a traditional IRA, you have to start taking out required minimum distributions, which the government wants their tax money. So there's a certain percentage of your nest egg that you have to take out every year. So people like to do these Roth conversions sometimes between like age 55 and 72, while maybe their incomes are lower so that they can move their traditional assets, pay a lower tax since they're making less. Maybe they're, for example, they've retired early, and so they're not making as much income, and then they can move that money from the traditional assets into Roth, pay the tax since the tax will be lower because they're not making as much, and then those assets can grow in the Roth and never be taxed again. So that's kind of a cool strategy as well. Now, the next one I want to talk about is a brokerage account. So we've talked about these before. You can open these at any brokerage, discount brokerage like Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard. Any of these will have traditional brokerage accounts, and you can put almost anything inside a traditional brokerage account. So I opened up one. I don't have too much in it, but I happen to have the exchange-traded fund VT, which is a total world index fund, in my traditional brokerage account. Now, there's not as many tax advantages to doing this, but there are some cool perks to it that I'll get into in just a minute. So this is a brokerage account is like a financial account designed to allow investors to buy and sell investments. So think of it as kind of like a bank account that you can open at a brokerage. So there are no limits as to how much you can deposit in a brokerage account, although some accounts limit their insurance to the standard $500,000 provided by the SIPC. You can open as many different types of brokerage accounts as you would like with any number of different brokers. You aren't restricted to keeping all of your money at a single firm. So a brokerage account is, some people call it a taxable account. It's the same thing. These accounts don't have any tax benefits, but they do offer fewer restrictions and more flexibility than tax advantage accounts such as IRAs and 401ks. So unlike an IRA or a 401k with a brokerage account, you can withdraw your money at any time for any reason with no tax or penalty. And also the amount of investment choices is a mile long. You can choose any kind of exchange traded fund, mutual funds, individual stocks you want to put into a brokerage account. You're not limited like you are with a 401k plan. If you hold investments in this account, this brokerage account, now this, listen carefully to this part. This is something you might not have heard about, but it's really important to know. If you hold investments in this account for at least a year, you'll pay the more favorable long-term capital gains rate of either 0%, 15%, or 20%, depending on your tax bracket. So money that grows inside a brokerage account is taxed at a lower rate currently than traditional income tax. So if you hold an investment for less than a year, you'll be subject to short-term capital gains, which equates to more of your ordinary income tax. So some people who might have a bunch of money in a brokerage account and might retire early and keep how much they withdraw kind of in the under $80,000 a year range, and that's all the money they live on, they can get away with doing that and paying 0% tax. Because if I remember correctly, under 80%, you're in the 0% long-term capital gains rate. So if you've had money in there, it's a brilliant way to retire early and pay next to nothing in taxes. Now, if you take out more than that, you'll get into the 15% or 20% capital gains rate. Now, these are subject to change in the future, and they certainly could, because some people are really clever at using that favorable long-term capital gains rate to pay very few, if any, taxes. So that's a really cool thing to know about. I'm not going to get into the details of this, but there's also something called tax loss harvesting. And tax gain harvesting. So for example, if your investment loses, if you're in an exchange traded fund, let's say the total stock index fund, and you go through something like we did with the pandemic where the account drops 30%. Let's say you decide to sell at the bottom where it's lost 30%. Then you can turn around and use that money to buy something similar, but not exactly the same. Then you lock in the loss. Now, the reason why this is good is because you can use those losses to offset gains in your account. It's a pretty tricky strategy. Financial advisors are good at doing this, but individuals with some research and some study can also do it. So if you have a lot of money in a taxable brokerage account, this is a strategy you can use to offset your taxes. Now, the second to the last one is kind of a tricky one. It's called the Roth conversion ladder. And there's a five-year rule to this. So the Roth conversion ladder involves moving your money from a tax shelter account like a 401k or an IRA into a Roth IRA. By doing this, you can withdraw the money from the Roth IRA penalty-free after 5 years. So I talked about this Roth conversion earlier, but I did not mention that you can't withdraw it until after 5 years. So when you move your money from a tax shelter account to a Roth, it's not treated as normal contribution. Instead, it's a conversion and it must sit there for 5 years. Then you can withdraw it with no penalties. This is the basis for the Roth conversion ladder and how you can withdraw money from a tax sheltered account without penalty before 59 and a half. So I'm going to quickly walk through the steps of how to do this. So step number one would be contribute money to your pre-tax buckets, such as a 401k or a traditional IRA. The next one is reach retirement. The next step, step three, would be to transfer your 401k or your 403b retirement funds to a traditional IRA. There's no penalty or taxes in that event. Those accounts are taxed the same and treated the same. Step four is to make your first conversion. So the year you retire, you can do a conversion and move a certain portion of funds from your IRA to your Roth. The amount you convert is typically 1 year's worth of expenses or how much you plan to live on. For example, if you want to live on a fixed amount every year, $40,000 a year, then you're ready to retire. You would move over $40,000 from your traditional IRA to your Roth IRA. Keep in mind that you will pay ordinary income tax on the amount you are converting because you have never paid taxes on this money before. So step number five would be convert partial amounts from your IRA to Roth IRA each year. Step number six is wait 5 years and use a different investment to get by on during those 5 years. And number step seven is collect your money. So after at least 5 years doing this every year, you will be able to utilize the ladder and withdraw your original conversions. For some early retirees, the Roth conversion ladder is the method in which they can fund the first portion of their early retirement until they turn 59 and a half and no longer need to be concerned about penalties. More importantly, you do not have to pay income tax on the money coming out of your Roth IRA account because you paid taxes during your conversion 5 years ago. So let's use the example of an individual who retired at 40. This is early retirement, which obviously doesn't apply to me or many, but it does to a few. They would move money from their traditional IRA to their Roth from the time they are 40 until they are 55. So by doing this, they have successfully created their Roth conversion ladder to fund early retirement. So one last thing to consider in this is how much you will pay in taxes on the Roth conversion amount you make each year when creating a Roth conversion ladder. So every time you move money from your 401k or your IRA to a Roth, this accounts as a taxable income for the year. So the good news is this might be the only portion of the income you pay taxes on. So the last thing I want to talk about, and to get more information on these things, if you're going to consider any of these, remember, my podcast is not investment advice. It's just some friendly helps and hints and education. So if you're going to do any of these, execute any of these plans or ideas, you need to talk to your financial advisor or your accountant or do your own research. The last one I want to talk about is called a donor advised fund. So a donor advised fund is like a charitable investment account for the sole purpose of supporting charitable organizations you care about. When you contribute cash, securities, or other assets to a donor advised fund at a public charity like Fidelity Charitable, you are generally eligible to take an immediate tax deduction the year you donate it. Then those funds can be invested for tax-free growth, and you can recommend grants to virtually any IRS-qualified public charity. When you give, you want your charitable donations to be as effective as possible. So donor advised funds are the fastest growing charitable giving vehicle in the United States because they're one of the easiest and most tax advantageous ways to give to charity. So a contribution to a donor advised fund is an irrevocable commitment to a charity. So once it's in there, you cannot take it out. The funds cannot be returned to the donor or any other individual or used for any purpose other than to charity. So while you're deciding which charities to support, your donation can potentially grow, making available even more money for charities. Most sponsoring organizations have a variety of investment options from which you can recommend an investment strategy for your charitable dollars. So this is a really cool strategy. So let's say you have a really big tax bill coming and you have some money, that extra money, and you know you're going to want to contribute to charities in the future. If you were really wealthy, you know, you could dump $100,000 into a donor advised fund, and that would be able to be used to lower your current year tax bill. And that money would be in the donor advised fund with an opportunity to grow inside investment vehicles like in mutual funds or exchange traded funds. Now that money, once it's in that donor advised fund, it is committed. You can't take it out. It has to be used for charity, but it's a really awesome way to plan ahead and manipulate your taxes legally, and also plan to give to great causes and charities, which I think blesses their lives and other people's lives. And I am a strong believer in it blesses the giver as well. So I hope you're all still awake. I hope you learned something. I know I went over a lot of concepts pretty quickly, And I know it can be a little overwhelming. So if any of those ideas stood out to you or could be applicable to you, go do a little research and figure out some more about them. That will be it for today, everybody. Thanks so much for listening and bearing with me during a little more complex episode. I hope you enjoy the variety that I bring different topics each week, some on money, some on minimalism, some on simple living, some on other topics, and I hope you're getting value out of the podcast. I would love it if you would share it with a family member or a friend, or post it on Facebook or social media so that other people can find the show. That's the best way for the word to spread. It'd be wonderful if you could leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. And I would really appreciate it if you would subscribe to the show and keep on listening. Hope you're all doing great. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week. And remember, the simple life is a good life.